Hello and welcome to Blueprint Cymru. My name is Simon Hobson. Today I'm joined by Dr. Daniel Roberts. Dan is with Campus in Cymru and he's here today to talk a little bit about their manifesto for the 2026 set of elections. So, greetings, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Hiya, yeah, thank you very much for having me on. I'm looking forward to an interesting chat.
So, perhaps you could tell the listener a little bit about what Campus is, and then tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be in the position you're in.
Yeah, so Campus is formerly known as Wales Cooperative Centre. It's a cooperative development agency, basically, in Wales that's existed for over four decades now. We help people in lots of different ways to try to develop those community-led solutions to the challenges that Wales faces. There's three main goals within our strategy. First one being to support, you know, the types of business models that are really going to maximise the benefits for people in Wales. So that's things like cooperatives, social enterprises, and employee-owned businesses. That's, you know, always been at the core of what we do. Campus started as the Wales Cooperative Centre, you know, in the context of the deindustrialisation in South Wales Valleys, and it was trade union-led, and it was trying to develop those solutions to the challenges of unemployment and supporting people who had lost their jobs to develop those new cooperatives that could create employment in those communities. So that's always been at the core of what we do. Secondly, we then, you know, we're working to develop those inclusive communities that are going to mean everyone can participate in the economy and in our communities. So a lot of that work focuses on digital inclusion and developing community-led cooperative models within sectors like housing and social care and things like that. And then thirdly, it's using that expertise to help organisations to develop their social value. So we work with public sector organisations, private sector organisations and third sector organisations themselves to understand the social value that they create and how they can work with the social enterprise sector and, you know, develop co-production and things like that to maximise the social value that they make. So it's a really interesting organisation. You know, there's, I think, nearly 100 people working for Campus across Wales now, across those various different projects. And it really is it's a really inspiring group of colleagues to have, you know, people with such diverse experiences supporting people to make that real positive change happen. And it's, you know, I feel very lucky to work with colleagues who've got so much experience in making Wales a better place. So my role within Campus is Senior Policy and Engagement Officer. So, you know, trying to work to ensure that Wales has as supportive a policy environment as possible for those businesses. And for those, you know, community-led organisations and solutions. Before joining Campus, I did a PhD at Swansea University looking at entrepreneurship policy in Wales. So that was looking at entrepreneurship policy, how that had been developed during the era of devolution, and how that had impacted attitudes towards entrepreneurship in Wales, and how Wales specifically is seen as a place, you know, to engage in entrepreneurship. And, you know, that was really interesting. You know, the Welsh economy is always something that I've been really passionate about. It's, you know, it's the core of the issue for me in Wales. You know, we need to develop our economy.
Yeah, it's something we talk about a lot on this podcast with different guests, how to encourage the entrepreneurship mindset, yeah. The fact that it's there, but often people with it leave, and how to prevent that brain drain. So that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as part of my PhD, I was asking, you know, young people about their attitudes towards Wales as a place to engage in entrepreneurship. And exactly as you say there, what we found was a lot of the people who did develop that entrepreneurial mindset didn't think that Wales would be a place to do that. And they would have to leave to, you know, to fulfill those ambitions. And I think a lot of that is about the story, about what, how we tell the story of entrepreneurship. And, you know, if we don't tell people the models of entrepreneurship that are appropriate in Welsh communities and are relevant to people's lives, then we're going to end up in a situation where people think they can't do it here. And I think, you know, there's lots of different types of entrepreneurship that can and are relevant to Wales. But a big part of that is the cooperative and social enterprise models, which are really relevant to the challenges that Wales faces and what motivates people. And I think, you know, these models have a huge role to play in creating the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Wales.
I'm looking forward to talking about that, because from my experience of conversations with this podcast and from comments we've had within New Wales about this topic, I think there's quite a lot of distrust towards the term entrepreneurship. Yeah. I think a lot of people assume it means people that are fly by night, here to take what they can out of Wales. And you know, a lot of feeling towards entrepreneurship is that it's people like Elon Musk that maybe haven't got Wales's interests at heart. And you know, changing that mindset and changing or building the understanding of actually what to be an entrepreneur is, and that there are different ways of approaching it, is really interesting, and I'm looking forward to that conversation with you.
Great.
Plus, you could say just a little bit about how that you went through. You said, you know, you did a PhD. Where are you from originally, and how you got to have that concern and passion for what you're doing today?
Yeah, so born in Caerphilly, but to North Walian parents, one from, you know, Carnarvon and Gwynedd, and my mum's from Liverpool, but from a Welsh family in Liverpool. So I lived in Caerphilly, Pontypridd actually, until I was five, then moved back up to North Wales. So I consider myself a North Walian, really. Then, you know, choosing where to go to university, it wasn't really a decision for me. I always wanted to go to Cardiff University, you know, to stay in Wales. And I did history and economics because... that's what I've always been passionate about, and it's, you know, there's a lot of discussion about you know, how GVA per capita and economic growth and things like that aren't the best measure for economic development. But I think the core of it for me was growing up always seeing Wales at the bottom of those league tables. It was a very simplistic response to saying, well, that's not I don't want to see us at the bottom of the league table. I want us to be at the top of the league table. So we need to work on economic development policy to change that story. And obviously, as you study more, there's more nuances to it than that. But that's basically the core motivating factor for me and why I always wanted to study economics in the Welsh context. And then Cardiff University was great. You know, really enjoyed doing economics there, and then had the opportunity to do the PhD at Swansea, looking at entrepreneurship policy specifically. And I've, you know, got that academic kind of context for the work we do. But what's great about Compass and the work I do now is that this isn't economic theory. We haven't cooked this up in a lab and said, actually, if we did entrepreneurialism or did business model a bit differently, things might be better. There's already so many people doing this work across Welsh communities. We've got the Social Business Wales Awards coming up next month, which is always the best event of the year because it rewards and celebrates the amazing work that's going on. So I'd really encourage people to go and look at the nominees for that, which are out this year, because you can see that this isn't just an academic idea. There's already people in Welsh communities doing this amazing work, showing that entrepreneurial mindset to solve the challenges that we face in Welsh communities. And it's really inspiring work.
So let's move on to talk a little about the manifesto then. So it's entitled Empowering Welsh Communities to Build and a Resilient, Sustainable and Inclusive Wellbeing Economy. That's quite a long title. You know, you've got, as I've read through it, and you've got 10 points or 10 calls to action in there that you want the next government of Wales to take note of and hopefully react to. So perhaps we could just go through that and look at what you're trying to get the government to do. I see that you've written your core goals in there are, number one, fairer, greener economy, two, a more equal society, and three, positive change. So that's all laudable. It might well be something that we'll see from some of the political parties as well, as far as a core to their policies. But clearly your approach is different in many ways in that it's community based. So so he gives talk about those, and you start off with a well-being economy. Now what would that be?
So this is a really interesting kind of conversation that's going on within Welsh policy circles at the moment, and it actually goes back to our discussion around GVA per capita, which is that the best measure for how, you know, economic development. You know, if you look at where we are on the league tables at the moment, Wales is almost, you know, it's consistently at the bottom of those GVA per capita tables in the UK context. So at the start of devolution, you know, the Welsh government was very clear in saying that, you know, the aim of devolution, the aim of the first few Welsh governments was to reverse that trend and to make sure that Wales caught up with at least the UK average. Whether the Welsh government has the power to do that and actually has the levers available to it to be able to do that So should we be spending all of our time focusing on that specifically, or can we develop a new type of economy and a new type of economic development policy that creates maximum social value? And, you know, economic growth might come from that as well, if there's more productivity, but it's not the specific goal. The specific goal is to create an economy that works for people and planet. For me, I think, you know, prosperity comes into that as well. And, you know, if you look at the Welsh economy, I've been lucky over the summer to go to the Basque Country and Denmark, you know, over the past few months. And, you know, the key difference, I would say, between Wales and those two places is that there's a lot more money in those places. Economic development has happened there in a much more sustained way. There's more money going around to be able to then afford this public services and, you know, services that we value in our community. So I think it's both, you know. And what's specific, you know, particularly interesting about the Basque Country is that they've achieved that economic growth and economic development through cooperative models. And what I think is really important is that what we see these models as being, as creating the social value that they do and the sustainable practices that they nurture, but they're also real tangible economic development models. They create profit, and profit, you know, is a hugely important part of this. But what we do with that profit is then distribute it fairly, distribute it in a way that's going to create that community and social value. But to do that, you need to make the profit. And I think that's where these models come into it. It's about those three aspects of it: profit, people, and planet, to create that prosperous, well-being economy.
And so to get to point number two, so that would be community ownership of the assets. And that's obviously key to what you're talking about there.
Yeah, so community ownership is a really pivotal conversation that needs to happen in Wales at the moment. I think we're, you know, falling behind the curve on this in the UK context. You know, the IWA did a paper a few years ago that looked at community, you know, rights to community ownership in Wales. Even at that point, was behind Scotland and England. And this is a conversation we've been having for a number of years. Now England's going even further with the English Devolution Community Empowerment Bill. So it's really essential that we have that community ownership legislation in Wales, I think. But, you know, we see huge benefits to community ownership. And the first one is what we see regularly in Wales is those new stories about communities coming together to save local assets. So, you know, a local asset that's really valued in a community, whether that's a chapel or a pub or, you know, wherever it could be, when that comes under threat, the community comes together to save it and keep it open. And that's the first, you know, most obvious, the clearest example of community ownership being huge, you know, positive. But also, I think there's long-term benefits of it as well. If that asset is owned by the community and it's run in the interest of that community, the decisions that it makes are about creating that the most value possible. So the economic benefits of that, of having those assets and being run by businesses rooted in the local community, and also it increases engagement with the community. The money that is made is then reinvested in circulating local within the communities. So community ownership is not just a way of saving assets, but also can be a real crucial part of local economic development policy as well. So Wales has a huge opportunity to put that, you know, at the heart of its community development agenda, but also its economic development agenda. And, you know, it's really beyond time now that we recognise that and really, you know, took action on it.
But is that something that should be alleged there as legislation, mm-hmm. As an option for communities? Mm-hmm. And if you take the pub example, if there's mm-hmm. a pub forced with closure and the community wants to keep it open and prepared to, you know, put community shares into it,
yeah.
Or does this need to be in the view of Compass and yourself, bigger project in that perhaps there's scope for owning resources such as energy extraction resources mm-hmm. by communities, and that obviously would broaden the sense of community, because if an energy project there, you wouldn't just be a village or a town, it would be maybe a whole regional part of Wales yeah. that own that. Is that something you're also thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's where we're seeing that the clearest at the moment in Wales, I think, is community energy. That's getting a lot of momentum in Wales. Having energy run having that asset run by the local community, again, it's the same process basically, but it's being run in the interests of the people in that community. It's not an extractive model of economic development that's taking that asset and the profits from it out of the communities. It's ensuring that that's being run in the interest of that area. And it's cross-sector. I think energy is absolutely pivotal, and we've got, like I said, lots of examples. I think Community Energy Wales released a manifesto on that recently that goes into that in more detail and has lots of great case studies on it. But there's different assets as well. So the Social Enterprise of the year before last, was Carramore, which is down in Pembrokeshire. It's a seaweed farm. I always use them as an example because that's an asset in that local area. And that could be run in a way that's extracting and taking the profits and benefit out of the community. But because Carramore is a community-owned business, it's being run, they're using those innovative, sustainable models because that's what's in the interest of the local community. And the profits that are made are being reinvested in that community. So, I always use Carramore as an example and then say I have very little technical knowledge of how they're doing it, but they are doing it and they're creating a lot of value. And that model is what's allowing them to do that. I think you can apply that to any asset in Wales if we have community ownership of that. And that can come in different forms, there's a community benefit society, community interest company. It could just be local businesses, but what we need is for that to be rooted in Wales. And the community-owned model is the way that value is maximised for Welsh communities.
And so we get to point three, which is long-term health. Is that health of communities or health of the individual or
I think they're probably interconnected, aren't they? But I think what we're talking about in this context is so much of the services that are essential to people's well-being that brings people together are run by those small-scale community organisations that aren't huge profit-making organisations, but they're essential to creating those communities that allow people to lead healthy lives. So something that's grown in interest in Welsh policy recently is that social prescribing model. So GPs not just prescribing medical treatments, but that social prescribing model, prescribing activities, which is great. And I think that's hugely important to developing those healthy communities and allowing people to lead healthy lives. But if we don't have those small scale community organisations delivering those services or making those services possible within Welsh communities, they're not going to be available and people aren't going to have access to it. So social prescribing, the model has huge potential for Wales and changing the way our communities work in the health context. But in order to facilitate that, we need to have support for those small scale organisations to make that possible. And then similarly, I think one really interesting policy in the document is that community health cooperative model. So a huge challenge that we face in Wales at the moment is the declining GP numbers. We're relying on GPs to take over services whenever people retire or move out of Wales. A lot of that is actually being taken over by kind of private sector organisations as well. Often, decisions being made outside of Wales about GP services that are being delivered in communities in Wales. The community health cooperative model would be a solution to that. There would need to be changes because a lot of the way the GP services work at the moment is that the GP has to take on personal liability for that service, which is as you'd expect, not something a lot of people want to do. If you could change that so it was a community health cooperative approach, bringing lots of stakeholders into the delivery of that service and the liability was shared, that could be a really big solution to that really, really pivotal challenge that Wales is facing in terms of GP numbers. So, and then not only would it possibly solve some of the problem, the benefits again of having that multi-stakeholder approach to delivering to that service, putting health boards, third sector organisations, at the heart of the decision making around that service would create, the networks that would come from that, the local knowledge that would come from that, could create real social value as well and, value of the service delivery. So I think that's a really interesting point that's in the manifesto that we're talking to people with.
I suppose that ties into what you talk about in point number four, which is to reshape social care sector as well.
Yeah.
And that being more community-based.
Yeah, exactly. So, we've got lots of really good examples of that in Wales. I suppose, first of all, we need to say that this is a sector that's in crisis. There's growing demand for social care in Wales. There's a recruitment and retention crisis. People who are working in the sector aren't getting paid well enough. A lot of the time, the decisions that are made aren't being made locally in the communities that they're affecting. But within that, we are seeing really great examples of organisations and ways of working that are developing that community-led approach. So as Catrefi Co-op, which is a great example of a really successful Welsh cooperative that is delivering social care in that multi-stakeholder cooperative model and seeing the huge benefits of that. We're also seeing different ways of working within some councils about ensuring that this decisions are made are long-term and community-led, bringing people together to make decisions about how their social care is being delivered, so people aren't kind of passive recipients of care but are proactively involved in the design of the delivery, which then has positive benefits for the people working in the sector, because obviously they're valued by the people who are receiving the care. And especially with that multi-stakeholder approach, it ensures all of those perspectives are really valued. But this is a sector in crisis in Wales. That's been the consensus for a long time now. And again, that cooperative model is going to be a huge asset in changing it. We've seen the Welsh Government has developed the policy of removing private profit from the care of looked after children, which I think is a positive step. We're saying that there shouldn't be huge profits being made out of the care of looked after children. That shouldn't be the mindset of the models that are delivering that care. But it's really important that we acknowledge that those cooperative models that are for profit are seen as a vital part of that sector, because how that profit is then distributed is going to be sustainable and ensuring that recruitment is and retainment of people working within that sector is key. So I think that again is a really important potential model. I think what becomes clear in the manifesto across all these sectors is that cooperative ideas and cooperative models have solutions in every sector in Wales. And that's when we're writing a manifesto, there'll be lots of organisations who write manifestos on their specific sector, whereas for us, we can talk about every sector because the cooperative model or social enterprise model is going to have a solution to all of them. So I think that that's really important, that mindset and that those values are at the core of what the next Welsh Government does.
So you can move on to fight. You talk about the triple bottom line business models.
Yeah,
I think that many people might need to explain what a triple bottom line business model is.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think this is a description that when it becomes clear, it really gets to the heart of what the models are all about. So in a traditional business, you've got the bottom line. The bottom line is about making enough money for the business to carry on and continue and to make the profit for the people who own the business. Whereas in the triple bottom line model, which is the social enterprise model at its heart, that's still pivotal. You need enough. You can't be a business if you're not thinking about financial sustainability and offering something that creates that value. The difference is that on top of that, making that profit and being a sustainable business, the impact on people and planet is as if or if not more important. So that means that if you think about it in the people context, the people who work in the business are getting a fair wage and have good working conditions, and then the people in the community around the business and Wales as a whole and the world are also at the heart of every decision that's made. And then also the planet being environmentally sustainable, adopting those green practices and sustainable practices wherever possible. That's not an add-on, that's not or a second thought. It's at the heart of every decision that's made, in the same way being financially sustainable is. And I think that's a really important and a good way of understanding it, because of course within the private sector, I'm sure we all know Welsh businesses, big and small, who are creating huge value in the communities and are hugely valuable and play an absolutely pivotal role in the Welsh economy. And in any economy, you need lots of different types of models playing a key role. Where I think, especially in the green or in the just transition context, where this is so important is that this embeds these ideas within the model. It's not reliant on one owner who is making those positive decisions, despite it not being the easy option, because they're passionate about it or because they're really embedded in their community and value it. And there's lots of people who are like that. These models, social enterprise models, it aren't reliant on one person making good decisions. They embed that process and that perspective and those values at the heart of every decision that's made. It's in the founding documents of the organization. It's in how the organization is governed. So that's why, you know, for me, especially in the just transition process, where we are going to see a lot of new businesses and new sectors being developed, having that gold standard of business model at the heart of our plans for the economy and for just transition is really pivotal. And the Welsh Government has, you know, a real big strategic role in ensuring that happens.
And you move on to talk about digital inclusivity.
Yeah.
And I think as a figure I saw in documents, 7% of people digitally excluded. Now that sounds not like a lot too bad to me.
Yeah.
7% is pretty good considering where Wales was
exactly.
Not that many years ago. So who would that 7% be? And sort of what's the inclusivity that still needs to be found then?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. So if you look at, we've got a specific report on this, which was a digital inclusion vision for the future, which was published last year. So if people are interested, they can look at that specifically. But so the context was, so Cwmpas, the Wales Property Centre, then started working on this in around 2006, 2007, I think. And at that point, you're right, it was about 35% of people in Wales didn't use the internet at all. So the fact that's gone from about 35% to about 7% today obviously shows a lot more people are using the internet now, which is good, and that has huge benefits for people and the economy and communities and things like that, and also for public service delivery, because there are efficiencies that can come from that. The biggest issue for me is that for that 7%, so much of our lives are online now, but for the 7% who aren't using the internet, that exclusion can have huge implications. It means you might not be able to access health services in the same way. You might not be able, you know, if you think about the banks and ATMs that are closing in most communities, it can make it a lot harder to access financial services. It can be a lot harder to be a part of the labour market. It can be, you know, the real basics of it. It can be a lot harder to, you know, stay in contact with friends and family and access community events and activities and things like that. So it's great that it's gone down from that 35% to the 7%. But when it's a 35%, when, you know, one in three people in Wales aren't using the internet, it means services have them in mind a lot more. Whereas now it's so much lower, we need to make sure that 7% aren't excluded more. Because what we know as well is that, you know, people with certain characteristics are far more likely to be digitally excluded. And, you know, a lot of the time that's, you know, older people, which I think is probably a lot bit easier for people to understand. If you've never used the internet before, you don't want to start later on. I think that's an easy one for understanding. The real, it's crucial that we work on that. There are also other people within Wales who aren't using the internet, especially with the cost of living crisis, you know, as we've seen over the past few years. Now, and you know, the additional pressures of needing to get online, you know, we've seen lots of examples, especially during COVID, but afterwards as well, where people having to choose between data and, you know, food and heating their home. And there's so many, you know, different elements of life that are getting more and more expensive, and, you know, digital and the cost of data as well and devices is really contributing to that. So, you know, I think another element that's important when considering thinking about that 7% is that because we've gone down over so many years and it's gone from 35% to 7%, that doesn't mean, firstly, that that's not going to go up in the future. The technology and everything is developing so rapidly that it's perfectly plausible that people who are currently online now won't be accessing or as confident accessing the internet or using digital services in the future as things developed. But also that it's not just that the idea of the people who haven't used it before aren't going to start. You know, it's very possible that as things develop, people won't be as confident using the technology in the future. So it's complicated, but I think if you know, where this comes into Cwmpas's work is that if we're going to have those communities where everyone can participate, if we're going to have an economy where everyone can participate and be in those cooperative community-owned models, if we have people who can't fully participate in that because they're not digitally included or accessing digital and data and devices is too expensive, we're not creating those inclusive economies that allow our communities and everyone within them to flourish. So I think it's a really important sector. And, you know, Cwmpas has been really innovative in this area and is delivered services and developed further research models, and we're cooperating with people, you know, across the UK and across other places as well, to ensure that Wales really leads the way on this. I think we've got a positive story to tell. We have, you know, been ahead of the curve in prioritising this, but we can't be complacent because, you know, it's going to be crucial to our future of our communities and the future of our economy as well.
I believe that digital inclusivity is also very important, which but the reason that we're going to talk about now, which is your call to action number 7, mm-hmm. and that's democracy. And yeah. on this podcast, I've spoken with a number of individuals, Electoral Reform Society mm-hmm. and others, about how you digitize democracy to mm-hmm. make it easier for people to vote. So yeah. obviously, if and when Wales moves in that direction, then having the digital inclusivity becomes even more important to people. Mm-hmm. But exactly. let's just talk about the democracy. And one of the things that I think you bring up is citizens' assemblies, which mm-hmm. is an interesting idea that's been discussed by lots mm-hmm. of people and is employed and used all over the world now.
Yeah.
But one of my questions about that, because I think mm-hmm. a lot of people are quite comfortable with the idea of citizens' assemblies. Mm-hmm. Would that need, in the view of Compass, would that need to have government look at how local communities and councils are restructured?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this something that you see as an addition to what's already there?
Yeah, so I think the context for this is that Compass delivers a really interesting sort of event called Start Something Good, which I really recommend people look at, because I've been to a few of them, and you know we do them regularly across Wales, and it's a really interesting model where you bring people together, fundamentally people who wouldn't be in the same room together and decisions are made previously, bring them together, you take a collaborative cooperative approach to that, you ask people to develop. Well, first of all, you ask people to identify challenges within communities. What are the challenges that people are facing in their community? And then you try to develop solutions to that. And you take a kind of hackathon model. So, you have different groups of people, lots of different types of people within those groups, people who haven't met before, people who don't normally work together day to day, get them working together and developing ideas. And then at the end, in a typical hack model, it'd be a competition and the best idea wins. We don't take that approach as you'd expect. We take a more cooperative approach where everyone gives feedback on the ideas. You can listen to the other ideas that people have had in the room. You can amend your idea. What you end up with from that is lots of potential solutions to the challenges that have been identified that have come from that collaborative approach. And we've done that, across different sectors. We in South Wales, we did some on food in local communities in Wales. Food is actually a pivotal sector, for Wales. It cuts on so many of the issues that we've spoken about. Developing those local resilient food systems is pivotal. So we did sessions bringing people together across South Wales about what that sector could look like in their communities in Wales. We've done some about local assets, local assets of community importance, how they can be maximised. We've done them with organisations, public-private sector organisations, with this approach. And the ideas that come out from it, and also the networks and collaborations and conversations that can come out from it are really key. And it shows that if you take that cooperative approach to decision making, service delivery, service design, you get real benefit from that. So, and if you had that as part of the democratic process with those citizens' assemblies, you can embed those democratic values and ensure that everyone can participate in them and proactively make that happen. So in terms of where that would fit into the current political system, I don't think that's something we thought about too much, but I guess it would be different in different communities, I guess. And having this as a tool and an asset in our armory for ensuring that democracy is inclusive of everyone, and that can be then applied in different contexts. But I think the key is having those values and proactively encouraging them and ensuring that they're part of the system in whatever way we think is relevant. There's real potential from that. And then linking that back to the previous point around digital as well is the importance of media literacy in this context. We can see in our communities the vital role that media literacy can play in ensuring that everyone can participate in democracy in that really, really healthy way, when not having access to all the disinformation that's out there at the moment. And when you're thinking about people who are online, it's not enough to just be online. You need to be able to get online confidently and securely. So being able to ascertain what's online, what's real, what's not real, what's political disinformation, but also what's all the different scams and everything that's online at the moment. So you know, I was at a conference recently and someone made the point that more people being online might not actually be good if people aren't accessing and engaging that in a way that's really damaging and potentially harmful to them. So it's not enough to just get people online now and that's great, leave them to it. We need to make sure that they are media literate and are doing that in a confident way. This means they're maximizing the value from it. We've had a project in Rotherham and Otago with Ofcom, you know, delivering that media literacy work in a similar way to that we've delivered the digital inclusion work, which has been around working with community organizations, with people delivering services, ensuring that they see the value of digital inclusion and work proactively to ensure it's the case. And I think that's needed for media literacy as well. We can't just stand by and not proactively seek to ensure that everyone is doing this in a safe and secure way.
So number 8 on your call to action, the housing crisis. That's a big one.
It is.
And I'm very interested in the concept there of the revolving loan funds that you discuss.
Yeah, so you know, thinking about cooperative and community-led housing, in some parts of, especially Europe, these models are at the heart of the housing system. You can look at specific countries, but I know Barcelona has been really innovative on this at the moment, Austria, and also in Scandinavia. The way that a lot of the housing sector is run is in that cooperative model way. It's not a new idea. It's been at the heart of the housing sector for a really long time. Whereas in Wales and across the UK, it hasn't been in the same way. It's always been here. It's been something that's it's been part of the sector, but it hasn't been as central to the housing sector. It's been much more, you know, on the fringes of how the sector has operated. So we deliver a project called Communities Creating Homes, just funded by the Welsh Government and nationwide, and we're, you know, working with communities and promoting that model to people. And we've got, you know, there's so many people interested in this and are interested in their local housing sector and ensuring that develops in a sustainable way that's inclusive for everyone in our communities, especially first language Welsh communities that the housing sector is absolutely pivotal to the local economy, and it's clear that it's being developed in a way that isn't in the interest of ensuring that those communities are in a way that's protecting the Welsh language. And this can be a real powerful solution to that, especially in areas of high, you know, secondhand density, as you can imagine. So we've worked, you know, over a number of years to develop a real pipeline of business of potential community-led housing projects that, you know, have those values of inclusivity and affordability, you know, embedded throughout. But what we also see as well, it's often a real challenge to actually turn this from a plan into reality. And there are great examples across Wales of where it happened, but in order to have a real step change in this and having community-led and cooperative housing as a real key part of the solution to the housing crisis, we need specific interventions. And you know, we need that specialist support for people who are looking to start these projects, but we also need you know, the financing options. And it's true for other sectors as well. You know, if land or an assets come available, you can have private sector organizations from outside the community, you know, come in straight away with you know, with the money and financial resources and everything to take on the asset. For a community to be able to develop that asset, you know, I often set up the organization who can do it and everything, it takes time and it takes resources. So having that revolving loan fund is a solution to that. And you know, it's an investment in developing a model that's going to play a huge role in not only sorting out the housing crisis in Wales, but also developing communities and having that community-led development in a way which is, you know, how we value in Wales and how aligned with the future generations principles and everything. So yeah, we've got lots of, you know, innovative ideas and case studies about how this model can develop within the sector. We know from other countries that there's huge value from it, so it's, you know, it's time now that this is really part of the agenda within Welsh politics, and it has been for a long time. You know, to be fair, the Welsh Government have funded work on it and have promoted it and seen the value of it. Now we've got these new ideas about how we can, you know, make that step change and really see it develop further.
So the Welsh language, which you mentioned there, and obviously is key to all of what you're speaking about. And your call to action number 9 is to do a social enterprise sector. and how that can play an important role in preserving and promoting the Welsh language.
Over the past few years, we've delivered a PEFFIN project, which has worked specifically in areas of Wales, again funded by Welsh Government, that has sought to promote and support community-led cooperative social enterprise models within areas of high second home density in Wales that are first language, Welsh-speaking communities generally. Fundamentally, it's about rebalancing the economy to ensure that the businesses and economic opportunities that operate within those areas are being capitalized on by people and businesses embedded in that local area that have the Welsh language at their heart. Otherwise, we're going to see economic development that puts the Welsh language at risk. These models are the perfect way of ensuring that economic development can happen and businesses can operate, but still have the Welsh language at their heart. And we've seen real success from that PEFFIN project, which is, support the development of new Welsh language community-led social enterprises and cooperatives that are ensuring that services are provided in that local community in the Welsh language, but also are bringing new people into those Welsh language communities and ensuring that people are able to use the language and learn the language and practice the language in that real natural way within those communities. So there's been real great examples of that, and obviously you can look online to see some of the case studies of organisations that have had that support. I think the next stage on this is about ensuring that this actually expands to be across Wales. It's pivotal with the Welsh language protected in those communities where it's the majority language, but also having ensuring that services are delivered and are available in the Welsh language across Wales is pivotal as well. And that's, we need to make sure that the economic opportunities across Wales are being taken advantage of by people who have the Welsh language and understanding of the value and importance of the Welsh language at its heart. In the core of it for me, I'm a Welsh speaker and something I'm really passionate about. We should do this work for the sake of it, because having the Welsh language is so valuable to us and so important to our identity and everything. But on top of that, it's also a huge economic asset. If you think about things that are going to root people in community, talking about the brain drain, the Welsh language is the perfect antidote to the brain drain, because it roots people here. People want to stay and be able to speak their language. It creates those networks of people across Wales that have huge economic potential, and that's across Wales, not just in areas where it's the majority language. The economic value that comes from having people and the networks that the language creates is pivotal, and it's the perfect context for those cooperative and social enterprise models to be developed. So we should work to ensure its sustainability and its future for the sake of it, because it's so important to us, but also we should recognise the huge economic value that it has as well.
I totally agree. I think it's a pivotal part of bringing the nation together as well.
Yeah,
if you look at Southeast Wales, there's so few Welsh speakers there, and particularly with people that move into Wales, to give them the opportunity to pick up a language and to get involved with it is critical. Yeah. It's something that many other places in the world do well for all their communities and for new immigrants.
Yeah,
and I think Wales could learn a lot from that. So I fully support that language side of things. And then on number 10 in your call to action, talk about the food sector and cooperatives.
Yeah.
And so this is agriculture, farmers, and food distribution.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. So we had a cross-party group meeting on this recently where we spoke about cooperatives in the food sector. And as I said earlier, food sector is absolutely pivotal for Wales. It's essential for our economy. It's essential for all of us leading healthy lives. It's essential in the environmental context. It's probably the one sector that cuts across every issue. It's going to be really important for Wales in the future. If you look at the cooperative sector in Wales, some of the biggest cooperatives that we have are in this sector. They're really financially successful and sustainable businesses that have had the cooperative model for a really long time. And it's, first of all, I think it's something that the wider cooperative sector can learn from, because these are financially sustainable and large scale businesses with big turnover. Some of the cooperative businesses in Wales with the highest turnover are in this sector. And it's it's one of the go-to models in the sector now, and you get huge benefits from that. You get really successful Welsh brands that have this model. You know, if you go into this local supermarket, you're going to see lots of Welsh products that says we're owned by our farmers on it, and it's really understood and part of the of that sector. So first of all, I think the wider cooperative sector should look at that and see what can we learn from those really successful businesses within this sector, because you can see the benefits that come from that. You have the sustainability of the models, and that mindset, which is about being profitable and about being financially sustainable. And I think, first of all, you know, as a thinking in a policy context, we need to understand the value that comes from these businesses and make sure they have access to the support that's needed, and you know, the development opportunities. What role can the government play in supporting the development of these models? And then going on from that, there's a huge potential, I think, of the community growing sector in Wales at the moment. Lots of the social enterprises and community organisations that we're supporting and are really thriving are those community growing initiatives. So I think increasing the collaboration between those community growing initiatives and those really successful farmer co-ops, you know, increasing collaboration, learning, I think there's huge potential there. We know there's huge challenges in the agricultural you know, sector at the moment. And it's so important and valuable to Wales economically, culturally, and everything else. I think, you know, it's really important to see the cooperative models have been a proven success and what role they can play in its further development as well. So that's what we would encourage when we're thinking about, you know, a lot of people thinking about what the rural economies as a whole look like at the moment. I think it's really important that we as Compass and the co-op sector as a whole really shout about the value that's been created with that co-op model within that sector. So when we're thinking about the strategy for rural economy development in the future, within food particularly, we've seen success, but what further models can we see, what further potential can we see for these models in that area too? I think, yeah, that cross-party group meeting, you know, with the information about that on our website and from the blog, I think that really indicates the value within the models, but also the potential for the future of these models as well. So yeah, I definitely really encourage people to have a look at that.
Dan Roberts, that's really interesting. Thank you very much for sharing all those ideas with us. There's some fascinating concepts there, which commend to future government. Hopefully, they'll take up, if not all, many of them, and be in conversation with self. So thanks for being a guest on Blueprint Cymru. And if you, listener, enjoyed the conversation, we've got many other episodes which you might like to listen to on similar subjects and different. And if you'd like to know more about the work that New Wales are doing, you can find out that on our website, which is new.wales. So thanks very much. Bye-bye.